Here's what I've come to realize about perfect happiness. It's as fragile as the bubbles that form on the top of a pancake. I know a fair amount about the subject of pancakes because I used to eat them all the time, not just for breakfast. When my dad was in charge of meals, pancakes could and would be served for breakfast, lunch, snack, and special pancake dinner, too. Whether we stayed at home and made them ourselves, went out for brunch at the local Flapjack Shack, or dined at that more famous International House of Pancakes, I can say with confidence that I was quite the student of the pancake-making process. But back to the bubbles. When you make pancakes, you mix together all the ingredients and ladle the batter onto the hot griddle or in the frying pan. Then, the next thing you're supposed to do is look for the bubbles to appear, because when the time is right, they'll float to the top and sides of the pancake. The reason these bubbles are important is because when you see them, that's how you know you're close. The time is near. It's also your cue to give those pancakes a flip, because if you don't, they burn, and your cakes are toast. So, those tiny bubbles signal everything's about to get turned on its head. That's why the perfect pancake bubble can only exist for a small moment in time. After it serves its purpose, making your mouth water in anticipation of what's to come and letting you know it's time for its world to turn upside down, it pops and fades away. What comes next, how the thing actually turns out, depends on your variables. What you've added to the mix, how much you've stirred the pot, your ability to blend, its general shape, fat content, toppings, timing, and luck. The comparison to high school is not lost on me either.
"You have a bad attitude, Grace Manning," Mr. Sands says, his hazel eyes narrowing slightly as he gives me the once-over. "I like it."
"And you have a lot of hair for an old man," I reply, kicking the footrest of his wheelchair.
"I think we should give you a mohawk."
"A mohawk?"
Mr. Sands tilts his head back and curls the corners of his mouth into a smile.
"Sounds painful."
"Bawk? Buck bawk?"
"Are you clucking at me?"
"Did you just cluck at me, young lady?"
he asks, trying to straighten up in his chair.
"I did."
"Implying I'm a chicken?"
"If the wing fits, Sandman."
"Miss Manning,"
Mr. Sands says formally, in a tone I imagine he would have used in business meetings.
"You are looking at a man who served in the 1st Marine Division in the Korean War, where I was stationed in the mountains by the Chosin Reservoir, the Frozen Chosin, as it was known. The men of the 1st were officially called combat-ready soldiers, which meant we were the first on the ground fighting. Unofficially, we were called bullet catchers, because we gave the enemy something to shoot at. Over the course of my life, I've been called a good-for-nothing jerk, a son of a bitch, and a whole lot of other things that would make both you and me blush if I repeated them. But in all my years, no one, but no one, has ever called me a chicken. So go ahead. Scalp me if you dare."
"You really want me to give you a mohawk?" I ask. "Are you serious?"
"I'd say serious as a heart attack, but they don't like people to joke about that around here."
Mr. Sands, a resident in the Hanover House retirement community, is one of the only people in this place who would make a joke like that, which is part of the reason he's my favorite resident. More accurately, he's my favorite resident by a mile, and I'm not just saying that because he's also the guy who taught me how to cheat at Texas Hold'em. I've been working as a candy striper at Hanover House, one of the premier facilities for seniors in beautiful suburban Philadelphia, since school started, the beginning of my sophomore year. That was when my mother informed me it was time to get a job because it'll help motivate you, Grace. Before this time,
I'd never realized Mom thought my level of motivation presented a problem. I never knew she'd given the subject any thought at all, for that matter. But even though I'd never admit it to her, I actually wanted to get a job. Having a built-in reason to escape the house a few days a week seemed like a pretty good deal to me. Finding some place to hire me turned out to be harder than I expected. I couldn't get work as a waitress because no restaurant wanted to hire someone who'd never waitressed before. And retail was another no-fly zone for two reasons. One, I don't care about clothes. And two, the girls who work in those stores freak me out. I always feel like they size you up according to your size.